is shalom. There shouldn't be machlokis. Shouldn't be any problems. Since we are talking mostly about Hilchos Kriyas HaTorah, so let's use Hilchos Kriyas HaTorah as an example. And by the way, it's really a good example, because in Kriyas HaTorah, first of all, as the rabbi, you are in public, you have to make decisions when the public is there, when the pressure is there, and when the problem of machlokes is the greatest. The problem of machlokes is the greatest because people's sensitivity is so great at the moment. Will I get this aliyah? Won't I get this aliyah? Will I get an aliyah at all? I want an aliyah and he wants an aliyah. This is why we find specifically the way it was set up, the whole union of Kriyas HaTorah is with a tremendous awareness of not making a machlokes. Right? So let's say it's a Monday or a Thursday, and you have a Kohen and a Levi. For instance, we'll talk about this problem also. Are you able to not call the Kohen? But let's forget about it. Let's say you have a Kohen and a Levi, and then you have two chiyuvim for Shlishi. Right. A very, very common problem. Either two people have yahrzeit, or one is a bar mitzvah, and one is yahrzeit, or his 50th wedding anniversary that halachically means absolutely nothing, and by him it's a major milestone in his life, and he feels, you know, what do you mean you're not going to call me, right? Especially he may be a member of your board, and you are in a tremendously difficult situation. What should I do? On the one hand, this man is a yahrzeit or his bar mitzvah is a chiyuv, for instance, but people don't understand of chiyuvim. It's what goes on in their minds. So what do you do? Now, if you go according to the simple halacha, you can find a very easy solution. That's the incredible part of it. You take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch says, well, sometimes you can add over the three. The whole idea of three is because we don't want to add more of a burden to the public, to the people who come to daven. But under special circumstances, you can add an extra three psukim or four psukim, whatever you want, right? And you can call somebody else. You know, it's according to the Iker Adin, according to the Haloche, the pure Haloche, there is no real problem, even though it's not the original takone, but there is no real problem in adding another few psukim and calling somebody else. But amazingly enough, you take a look at the Mishneh Berurah, you take a look at the Aruch HaShulchan, anybody who talks about it says clearly the Ein Noihagin came. We don't do it. We don't do it. And it's an amazing thing. Here there is such a tremendous awareness of machlokes. There shouldn't be machlokes, right? That the vice president of the shul shouldn't get angry, right? That he shouldn't leave the shul. And you have a halachic basis for avoiding the problem. You can give both aliyahs, and they all say, but we don't do it. So there is a tremendous thing. There is such a concept that if it hasn't been done, don't come up with novelties, with new ideas. Better that the man should live angrily if you can't avoid the problem than changing the way we have been doing things, even though halachically there is a basis for it.
From what standpoint is it better not to do it?
100%. Don't do it. Don't do it. They say clearly, don't do it. No matter what, don't do it. You can't do it. Act as if that is 100% the halacha. Again, we see the koyach of the minhag. Don't start new things. Now,
here's what's happening. We have people going to be angry.
Right.
We have a halacha that's clear. So don't change the halacha.
No. Don't change the minhag. Which doesn't take, the minhag is you only have three people, and that's all. You never add a fourth one during the week. Right? Even though you are not adding to shalom, right? You're not adding to the peacefulness of the situation, right? You may get it in your hands a machlokes, people will be angry, which is usually a reason to use the shas ad chak haloche. In this case, no one does it. And if you have had experiences in Shulam, you know it's just not done. You don't add a fourth aliyah during the week on a Monday or a Thursday. There are three and that's all. So how do you get out of it? So you try to get out of it. But I'm just bringing you a proof. That you have to be extremely careful with being a mechadesh, with coming up with novel ideas, even if it's for the best reason. And I must bring you the example. When I was in Mexico, the Chilul Shabbos of the Bar Mitzvah or Shabbos bothered me very much. Like every rabbi, right? You live in a community that all of a sudden you'll have 10 times as many people on a Shabbos, right? And you know that they are coming with cars, and the whole tefillah is different because there are people who are not used to coming to shul, and it's all, everything is disturbed. So you try to find some way out. What can I do? What can you do to make the bar mitzvahs halachically better? How do you do? Now, you're very restricted. You can't say, well, make it all on a Monday or a Thursday, because Monday and Thursday the parents don't want, right? They say it's not a day off. People won't come to the bar mitzvah. We have to do it either on Shabbos or on Sunday. So listen to this idea. Then people told me that other people came up with the same idea. So I thought, you know what? We are talking about the Chilul Shabbos of dozens, sometimes hundreds of people, right? Was the problem on Sunday that there is nothing that can be a substitute for Kriyas HaTorah? Okay? Alright, so now, look what I'm weighing. The Chilul Shabbos, again, on the one side of the scale, there is the Chilul Shabbos of hundreds of people. Yes? Why can't we do the following? Let's create the following procedure. You'll take out a Sefer Torah. Take out a Sefer Torah. And the Bar Mitzvah Bocher will read from the Sefer Torah. Because without the Sefer Torah, people don't call it a Bar Mitzvah. Right? It has to be something to the word Sefer Torah. Meaning, when I suggested he'll daven for the Omer, they laughed at me. I mean, that's not a Bar Mitzvah. I mean, it has to be Kriyas HaTorah. Okay. So what is the issur to take out a Sefer Torah? Open it up. And the Bar Mitzvah Bocher will read the Sefer Torah. More. He wants to say maftir. Let him say even maftir. We'll make up a maftir for this Kriyas HaTorah. No brochets. No brochets. No brochel levatole. And then after, we won't go into the halachic basis for it. There is a basis for even allowing the Bar Mitzvah Bocher to make a brocha rishono before the Kriyas HaTorah and a brocha achrono. First of all, we won't go into the halachic details, but usually they don't even say Birchas HaTorah in the morning. It's not even a brocha levatole. So everybody will be happy. Look, there is Kriyas HaTorah, right? On a Sunday, the shul will be absolutely full. There is no Chilul Shabbos. What can be better than this idea, right? So I remember right in the beginning, you know, when you have all the energy still, you want to do something major, you know, say, okay, you know, I'll stop the tremendous, you know, I'll do for that. Baruch Hashem, they are gdolim. And of course, you don't take such a step without talking to a gadol, to somebody. So the reaction is, absolutely not. Don't do it. Yeah? So in the beginning, you are shocked. What do you mean? Don't they understand the situation? I mean, what can be better than that? You're actually solving the problem, because they would also rather have it on a Sunday. Right? Especially in Mexico, many people still, Shabbos is, for many people, is a working day. For some people, it's a major working day, right? Remember, I mean, that a lot of major stores, Shabbos is the main business, right? So just that, they would be happy to be on Sunday. You absolutely solve the problem of Chilul Shabbos by the Bar Mitzvah. It would, without any question, it would catch on easily. Now, and you really, in the beginning, you're shocked by the reaction of, and it's not only one, and I spoke it over with a few, and it's incredible how the reaction of each one was out of the question, like, don't even talk about it. We just don't do it. And after a while, you become a little bit more mature and you see the tremendous insight that there is to it. Of course, if you weigh the immediate pros and cons, there's no question about it. Of course, it's a great idea. It's a fantastic idea. But there is a concept of better let there be 100 people being Mechalel Shabbos, right? And don't change ois achas, one thing from our religion. Don't create your own private religion. Because in the long run, the price that you are going to pay for chidushim, for novelties, is that more people will abandon real Torah than people will join real Torah. Meaning, if you are short-sighted, you don't see it. But when you really have the real insight into the view of Gedolim, the view of the Gedolei Torah, the idea is, fine, it's a terrible thing, Chil Shabbos, try to minimize it. But to change something, you know the price of changing things? The price of changing things is that you are uprooting real Torah. As long as they are Mechalel Shabbos and everybody knows they are Mechalel Shabbos, they know it, you know it, then Torah is safe. You are not really tampering with Torah. The moment you start something new, so you are a Talmid Chochem and you know exactly how to make it, it shouldn't be a Broche Levatole, right? But the guy who's going to come after you, right? Or the rabbi in the next town who is an Amoretz, right? He won't understand the subtleties of what you are allowing to do and what you are not allowing to do. By him, that's going to become the halacha that you, any day you want to, you can make for yourself a Torah. Right? And then, if you're allowed to do this, how far are you going to go? What new chidushim are going to come up eventually? I remember that I saw that the first thing that in Germany, that the Reform movement did, it wasn't even called the Reform movement at the time, was to abolish the saying of Bamei Madlikim Friday night. You hear the major change? No more Bamei Madlikim, it's in Nusach Ashkenaz, no Bamei Madlikim Friday night. And the Gdolin came out as if Bamei Madlikim is the Yesoid of all Yesodos. They fought like liars to put back the Bamei Madlikim in the prayers Friday night. What's so important with Bamei Madlikim, right? And he said, so you don't say Bamei Madlikim. It's a Mishnah, so what? Who cares about Bamei Madlikim? Fine, great, but for that to make such a major fight? Now we know how right they were. Now we know how right they were. It's because of that Bamei Madlikim that they do whatever they do today. I mean, if the Bamei Madlikim would have been won, if that battle would have been won, there would be no reform movement today. So that is the attitude. You have to be extremely careful with consequences. Don't mean, the safe side is don't be mechadesh. You want to be mechadesh? Talk it over with Dolin. They have an instinct. They have an intuition of what is a first step to a tremendous change and what is not. However, as opposed to that, a change that already happened and already has been established, right? Then, of course, your judgment is completely different. We see, I want to bring you the example of here that was what happened in Germany. Again, it shows you that what is the situation was in Germany in the turn of the century. They decided in a certain community in Germany that Nesias Kapayim, is not a dignified act. It's not dignified, right? You know, people raising their hands, you know, moving back and forth. It's not dignified. It's not German. So they abolished it. They abolished it. So the question was for the rabbi, first of all, should he leave the shul because of that? Should he leave his job? Second of all, he can daven shachris early because people don't come to shachris, right? People come late. I mean, shachris, that's already for the, you know, for the old people. We, you know, modern people come for Kriyas HaTorah, the sermon, and Musaf. So they abolished it by Musaf, right? When the audience is there. But by shachris, we can still make Nesias Kapayim, Tozon Yontev, of course, right? It's in Chutz Lord, it's not the... So the question is, can he change that? Can he make Nesias Kapayim by Shachris? And second of all, maybe he should leave the job altogether. So I want to read you what Reb David Zvi Hoffman writes on this. So he says, yes, b'di'eved, even though the minhag is to have nesias kapayim by Musa, but b'di'eved you can do it in Shachris. And by the way, you know that I remember in many yeshivas that Simchas Torah they have nesias kapayim by Shachris, even though that's not the original takonah. But says b'di'eved you are here, so it's okay. What? Yeah, right.
Because Shikras.
The what? Because of Shikras. Right, because you are afraid that after Kriyas HaTorah everybody has a drink, so therefore people will be shikar. If you're shikar, you're not allowed to miss Messias HaKabayim. So it's so that's what they do. That's what they do. So that's what he brings down, that it's okay. In the Simen Yud Bet in Milamed Loil, and it says Mukomokom Hu Mechurer. But remember, Sharoivo Om Sharochel Beis Hakneses Rak Ben Musaf. So what's going to be that the majority of Jews, right, who the big audience won't be there by Shachris, so they'll never have Birchas Koyanim. So he tried to convince them that the importance of it, etc., etc. The moment you say it, Hashemeya Yishma, you say it, so those who want to listen to you will come early, and they'll come to Shachris. And those that don't want, they'll come later. But and he says, but at least who is nafshoy itzil? But at least you fulfill your obligation. You fulfill your obligation. Who is nafshoy itzil? I once asked Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Olav HaSholem. You know, we always say that the keshem shem mitzvah lo imadovra nishma, the same way that you are mitzvah to say things that people will listen to, keep away from saying things that people won't listen to, right? There's a concept of mutaf shiyeh shagim lo yemezidim. I mean, many times the obligation is, don't say it. If you see it's not going to work, don't waste your words, right? Don't waste your credit. Such a concept, don't waste your credit. On the other hand, there is such a concept of there is such a concept that, but I have to say it, no matter what I have to say it, doesn't it? Aren't they contradictory concepts? Right? Especially when you're a rabbi, very often you know for sure that what you say is not going to help. But should you still say it or not? Remember, you're paying a price. When you say something that is not going to be heard, right? Remember, you're paying a price. There is a certain amount of credit that you may be losing by saying things that seem ridiculous to them. Remember, there are many things that for us is a dover poshet, right? Remember, we have a different language, we have a different scale of values with them. To you it's a dover poshet, and to them it's ridiculous. So every time you say something that to them sounds ridiculous, you lose a little bit of your credit. So when should you say it and when shouldn't you say it? So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky told me, this is the cloud. When you must say it, when you feel that your soul, your neshom is in danger. The moment you come out, you guarantee that at least you will be solid in your beliefs. It's an incredible thing. In other words, he recognized, and many times we forget about it, I mean, we really think that we are in an ivory tower, we are safe. The truth of the matter is, the moment you become a rabbi in a community, in the average community today, to a certain degree, you are paying a price that you yourself don't realize. You think that you are so solid in your beliefs and in your hanhoges. You will be so shocked after 6 months, the doubts that you are going to, is this really important? You know, should I really be makpil? I mean, it's only a zite of the taz. Should I really be makpil on that? All of a sudden you have doubts yourself. I mean, is it really? And even if you don't really clarify what your doubts are, you can't avoid feeling, it's not so bad after all. Meaning, even Chas v'Sholem, I say Chil Shabbos, you are not Chas v'Sholem going to be influenced by your Balebatim to be Mechal Shabbos. But that's not the point. The point is that you lose sensitivity to Chil Shabbos. You actually do it. I mean, no matter what, it doesn't hurt you anymore. It stops hurting you. After a while, when you see 90% of your balebatim coming by car to shul, after a while, I mean, you lose sensitivity to it. So even though Chas v'Sholem, you are not in danger of being mechallel Shabbos, but Shabbos means something else to you. If you get up and you scream about Shabbos, you may be paying a price. Like I told you, you lose the credit, but one thing is for sure. You will strengthen yourself. V'ani es nafshi hitzalti, according to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, means literally, ani es nafshi hitzalti, when you scream, you save yourself. Forget about them. Them you're not going to influence at all. You are going to be stronger in your own beliefs by saying it. So, according to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, the rule is, if it's not going to help, don't say it. Except if you feel that you are losing sensitivity to the halacha itself, then get up and scream about it. So that's what he means. Who is nafsho hitzil? At least if he talks about it, because after a while himself is the same. Is he kapayim? No. After all, it's not that important. Oh, if you get up and you scream about it, one thing is for sure: you recognize what the importance of nesias kapayim is. Okay, so that's what he says, and then he gives another etzah. He says, and if the whole point is, and the nesias kapayim is not dignified, so what you can do is the following. Listen to this point. You have, let's say, 20 koyanim in the shul, and many of them don't know how to carry a tune, and they make it undignified. It's the fault of the koyanim, right? If you would choose out of the 20 koyanim, two or three who know how to carry a tune, and they sing nicely, and they would make the Nesias Kapayim something that should be a nice experience for the audience, then you can keep the halacha without having to change it altogether. So that's what he advises. V'yesh lesake, that two or three of the Kohanim should be the singers, and tell the rest not to sing. Because that they have a point. The prayers have to be dignified, so they have a point. They should do it belachash. Because we are also for it that the duchon should be mehudor. Here you have the compromise.
Exactly.
So you have to do it that way. In other words, so that's his compromise. His compromise is based on the halacha that even we believe that it has to be I don't mean the saying. In other words, in the saying, not, but in the nigunim. We are talking about the nigunim. Of course, he's referring to the nigun. To the nigunim that they sing by Berchas Koyan. That is not the meaning of being yoitze, right? What you are saying. And Moram, it's not so simple. Achorim, you know, that Rav Chaim says not to that each one has to say it. But Lav Davke, the Chazon Ish, they said otherwise, that you could be yoitze. There is no such a law that each one has to say. So, but he's talking about the nigunim anyway. But so, this is his compromise. This is as far as you should go, and if it doesn't help, it doesn't help. Now, and what about your question? Should you leave your job? Right. So he says like this. Im lo yuchal lagia lehania is levav anshei hadosoi. So he says like this. You want to leave your place? What good are you going to do to the community if you're going to leave it? You should leave the place for a poisheya that is going to do worse. Now, remember, it's Germany at the turn of the century, right? It's not, Baruch Hashem, things are a little bit different today. But this is the attitude. The attitude is, I'll do the maximum under the circumstances, and I have to read you the next part. He says, "V'yesh ledamo is dovor zeh im mashekosav amaram shik she'im hatzadikim yachmiru alatzmom yoyser midai." If you want to keep your level of tzidkes, v'hareshoyim v'abeinonim yigber boretz, and you leave the field open for the reshoyim and the beinonim. If you, because of your tzidkes, because of your level of tzidkes, says the Maram Shik, will not accept to stay in a place with Rishoim, so they'll take over the world, he says. אשר הכי נראה לאני אסדייתי, אין לזוי וסמישמרתוי, don't leave your job except for the following reasons, and it's very important to hear the reasons that he gives. אם יוכרח לעשות עבירה, if you have to do personally an עבירה to keep the job, then it's out of the question. Any עבירה, you have to eat non-kosher food, you have to eat food that you believe it's not kosher in order to go to their banquets, whatever it is, out of the question. אוי לשתר בפשיעו גדולו, for instance, orgel, the organ in the shul, for instance, that's a pshio gdoilo, he calls it. If you are part of it, then it's osur, because that's called a pshio gdoilo, meaning netzias kapayim, to uproot it and have it in shachri, since b'diyev it's okay, that's not called a pshio gdoilo, so even if you are part of it, it's not terrible. But if you reach the level that it's a pshio gdoilo, keep away from it. V'zemar noshim b'veis haknesis, or women as part of the choir, that was a major problem in Germany at the time. If you have to be in a shul with women as part of the choir, then better leave. Or ukfira bevias hamoshiach. Again, at the time, that was a major problem. Meaning, the rabbis weren't allowed to talk about Mashiach because it sounded too naive.
The it was unpatriotic to talk about Mashiach.
Exactly. Exactly. Also, but especially say it's anti-intellectual. Now, the rabbi has to be an intellectual. Mm-hmm. How can you believe in the naive tales of Imos HaMashiach?
Right.
Then you're not a good German. Right? You're not. What do you mean you're talking about going to Israel? You know that the Mashiach. Berlin, Yerushalayim. What do you mean, Yerushalayim? Berlin, that's our capital. How can you talk about Mashiach? So that's why he mentions Mashiach. He could have talked about other things too. But I'm sure that he chose Mashiach because that was a major problem for the rabbis in Germany. They weren't allowed to talk about Mashiach. So he says like this. If he has to make a statement that implies a rejection of the idea of Mashiach, better leave your job. But in other words, he doesn't tell him you should speak about Mashiach. But if you have to make a statement that implies that you don't believe in Mashiach, better leave your job and don't make such a statement. What does he mean by Pshio Gdoilo? That's the most unclear of his terms. What is called a Pshio Gdoilo and what is not called a Pshio Gdoilo? So, obviously, it's impossible for us to judge. And of course, in each community, right, in each generation, the Pshio Gdoilo is different. You know that. That's a valid question. Now, remember the Yesoid of the Chazon Ish. Remember the Yesoid of the Chazon Ish. Now, you know the famous story of the Chazon Ish, that in the beginning he fought against Hebrew. When he came, he fought against Hebrew being the language of Chinuch. Right. And a few years later, he established a cheder where they taught in Hebrew. So somebody asked him this theory, right? Mikor Maikosara Vashta Maikosara, what happened? What happened to you? So he gave the famous example of the general who, in the middle of a war, was stopped and told, there is a ceasefire, go back home. Many years later, he's called up again, the war started again. So he goes back to the same place where he stopped last time. He comes, there's nobody there. So he gets in touch with his general, with his commander, and he says, what's going on? He says, well, what do you think? I mean, the war is always in the same place. A war is fought in many fronts. Sometimes the battle is here, sometimes the battle is here, right? It's many fronts. It's the same war. Of course it's the same war. But the fronts are different. At that time, said the Chazon Ish, the battlefront was the Hebrew. Today, the battlefront is something else. So you keep fighting the same battles. You can't keep fighting the same battles. You have to know what the battle is at the time. Like we said, the statement of belief in Mashiach was at that time a major issue in Germany. That was it. Torah min haShamayim didn't bother them. If you say Torah min haShamayim, that's fine. But don't talk about Mashiach. Here. Of course, nowadays I'm sure that people have said something else is the major issue. So whatever is not a transgression of an avera, the idea of a pshio gdoilo depends at the time, right? Certain issues are more important than others. So it's impossible to give make a rule, say, this is a pshiyot doilo. At that time, that was the pshiyot doilo. That was the pshiyot doilo. If today that would be a major issue, women singing in the choir, so that would be the pshiyot doilo, right? Today, I would say that pshiyot doilo could be men not making a mechitza issue, right? Not having a mechitza issue today is the battlefront. That's what we are fighting about, right? So that would become the same as the organ and the other things that he mentioned. Now, you talked about the saying halal with a bracha in Yom Ha'atzmaut. Meaning, irrespective, it doesn't make any difference what is your position against for or against Zionism. It's absolutely irrelevant. But one thing is for sure. Today, if you want to be honest about it, that's not a battlefront anymore. I mean, that is not the issue that will make or break Yiddishkeit, whether you do say halal in Yom Ha'atzmaut or not. Then the question is a halachic question, right? So if you believe that saying halal in Yom Ha'atzmaut with a broch is a broch elevator, then it's an isur. If you really are 100% convinced, right, then you have to quit your job. Right, like he said, if it's an avera, quit your job. But of course, we have to recognize that no matter what you really believe, that who is right and who is wrong, to go to the point of saying that everybody who says that you're allowed to say a broche for halal yom ha'atzmaut is over an isur d'oraisa, right? I don't really believe him. I don't really believe that he believes that's 100% correct. It's more of a position of hashkofe than halokhe. I mean, let's be honest about it. I mean, it's a hashkofe position. It's a position of consequences, which means like this. The problem with Zionism today, it's a problem not of halokhe. It's a problem of consequences. It's like the question that I told you about mitzvah on Sunday. It wasn't a halachic problem. Everybody can sit down and find heterim why you should make a bar mitzvah on Sunday. The problem is, what will be the next step? The problem with the anti-Zionist view is definitely a problem of consequences. What will be the next step? What will be if we really see Medinat Israel as Geul Hasein or Reish Yismich as Geul Hasein? What are the consequences for Klal Israel of such a position? Of course, once you have such a hashkofe, then of course the problem is it's a broche levatole. If it's really a danger, so then it's a broche levatole. Now, but remember, we are not talking about establishing the halacha of saying a broche for halal yom ha'atzmaut. We are talking about a situation when you are going into a community that says halal with a broche yom ha'atzmaut. Do you have to leave? It's absolutely ridiculous even to talk about it. Of course you let them say halal with a broche yom ha'atzmaut, and you're wasting your credit to fight it. It's such a terrible waste. It's 100% a loss of your credit, of your credibility, of everything good that you could do. You are going to waste it on such unimportant issues, because right now that's not the battlefield anymore, right? Use the same energy for Kashrus and for Shabbos that you are wasting to fight the Brocha Yom Ha'atzmaut. Let him say the Brocha Yom Ha'atzmaut. I don't say, nobody forces you to say it. So, concerning this kind of issues, it's ridiculous. Don't waste your credit. Don't waste your credit. It's a.
What if someone asks you if you make a bracha?
Okay, now you're coming to the problem of when are you allowed to lie? That is the question now. By the way, that's a major problem. A major problem. But it's, since it's, you know, it's Bein Odom Lamokoi, right? Hopefully the man will never find out you are lying to him. So you have to be extremely, extremely careful. That you are allowed to lie, there's no question about it. You're allowed to lie. The question is, to what extent? To what extent? You know that the Gemara says, for instance, let's say the halacha is such and such. You believe 100% that that's the halacha. But, I mean, they won't take you seriously, right? Are you allowed to quote somebody, right? Reb Moshe Feinstein, Olam HaShalem, said it. Are you allowed to do that?
Yeah.
Huh? Yes, you're allowed to do it. You're allowed to do it. I know it sounds... it's a difficult concept. Of course, you should better, you know, find out for sure that he said it. But let's say as a last resort, right? You know for sure, you have no doubt that that's a halacha. You have absolutely no doubt. But who are you after all? And by quoting Ramosha Feinstein, which is so easy because now he's not here to, you know, to check up. That's the easy way. By the way, you know that the day the Goyen of Vilna, the Vilna Goyen died, the Bezin of Vilna made a cherem for anybody saying things in the name of the Grof. Yeah. They made a cherem. Why? Because, of course, the moment the Godel died, there are millions of things that all of a sudden he just said. He told me, you know, that's so easy. So the point is, you are allowed to use it. You are allowed to use it. You know that lying is the only Avera that you are allowed to use, now it's for the right purpose. The only Avera. All other Averas, kosher food, you have to eat kosher food. Midvar sheker tirchok, right? Like they said, tirchok. It doesn't say, don't say sheker. Midvar sheker tirchok. Keep away as much as possible. But if you can, like for instance, mishum sholem bayis, like the Gemara says, right? Or mishum you're allowed to lie because of, like the Gemara says, anivus. Right? In other words, did you learn korah shas? Not really. For instance, you're allowed to lie even though you finish shas. You are allowed because of your own modesty to say an untruth, right? And Hillel goes even further. He says you're allowed to say Kalonova Hasudo, right? Even though it's absolutely not true. You're allowed to say it, right? Because for the right purpose you're allowed to lie. So that's, by the rabbi, it's a, you have to be careful. You have to be careful because you may be caught. Understand? That's what, you have to be careful. But on the other hand, you are allowed to get out of it. You are allowed not to say the truth. You are allowed not to say the truth for the sake of Darkei Sholom. You are allowed to say it. In other words, you can even say, yes, I do say, even if you don't, yes, I do say a bracha in Yom Ha'atzmaut. You know that it says that even when you lie for the right purpose, you should minimize the lie, right? Onoichi Esop Chorecha. You know what the Gemara says. Even though he was actually misleading his father, he put it in such a way, he didn't say Ani Esop Chorecha, which would imply I am Esop. Onoichi always separates. Onoichi I am whoever I am. Onoichi I am Yaakov. Esop Chorecha, because the word Onoichi is different than the word Ani. In other words, even Yaakov, in a situation that it was 100% permitted, not only permitted, it was mechuyev not to say the truth, he had to take the brochets. He minimized the lie. That's a chiyuv. You have to minimize the lie. I mean, you can say, do you say the bracha on Hallel or Yom Ha'atzmaut? I say the bracha on Hallel, so you don't say Yom Ha'atzmaut. You minimize the lie. Or we find by Avraham Avinu also, right? Why did you tell me Achoisihi? Right? So, because I was afraid. By Avimelech, I was afraid because they're going to kill me. Oh no, Achoisi, she is, because she's the daughter of my brother. Why do you have to say that? Remember, if I ever mean, like he but you agree that you lied. Yes, but it wasn't a straight lie. It's important. Meaning, even when you lie, make sure that the words have an achizo, meaning that they have an interpretation in a kosher way. That's an important yisoid in lying.
What's the purpose of it
is 100% clear. Even though you are lying for the best possible purpose, you become a liar. Now it corrupts your soul. For your personal stopping the complete corruption of your soul, remember, lying l'shem shamayim still makes you a liar. Right? So therefore you have to minimize it. The more you cut down on the 100% lie of your statement, the less corruptive it's going to be towards yourself. That's the point. Not else. I'll see you're allowed to, right? Because for the right purpose, you're allowed to. So that's a very delicate issue with a rabbi. With the
yeah. And you found this with
about
and his son, with changing when she used to serve him, what he didn't want.
Right.
But nevertheless, he told him, from now on, don't do it, because wouldn't have shine him shekel.
Exactly. You're not allowed to, because of course you become corrupt. You become corrupt, right? Like the Gemara in Broches, what it says, when the man was getting some of the branches of the grapes that he would take back from his oryx, from his worker. And there was a story that the worker would fool him, right? So he was dishonest with him concerning the branches of the grape, which are almost worthless. And he was punished that his wine became sour. So the Chachomim came and told him, you know, maybe you were dishonest with your worker. So he said, I was dishonest with him. You know what he did to me? You know the amount of loss that I had because of him? So they said, yes, but the time of toim, meaning you tasted the taste of dishonesty. So even though it's not really usur, what you did was 100% correct, because you had a right over the branches of the grapes, but the time of toim, you taste the taste of theft. In other words, anything you do, even though it's permitted, but it's corrupting, you have to minimize. It corrupts your soul. Okay, now, a major problem is, we're talking about the non-fume people that come to shul. What do you do concerning giving an aliyah, aliyah latoiro, to people who are not from, who are not religious? They just came to shul for the bar mitzvah, and they demand, or you have pressure to give them an aliyah latoiro, to be called up to the Torah, and they are koyfrim. You know that they are non-believers. What do you do?
Not non-believers. If they come to shul, they believe.
No, they just came for a bar mitzvah.
But what's a bar mitzvah? If they come to shul, they believe.
It's a social thing.
But they believe.
It's a party. I mean, they come because they were invited by the family. It's not Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur.
Rosh Hashanah
Yom Kippur. Oh, so Rosh Hashanah has many tshuvas on this thing. The Moshe has many children. Now the halacha, again, the simple halacha is clear cut. You are not allowed to give an aliyah, the simple halacha. You are not allowed to give an aliyah to a koifer, because when he says the shame, it's not a shame, right? It's like the Gemara says, if a koifer writes the shame, he writes a sefer Torah, you can burn it. Why? It's not a shame. A shame that was written without kavon, is not without belief, is not a shame. You can burn the paper. That's why a book that has the shame Hashem, but was printed, written by a koifer, you can throw out. No problem about it. So saying the shame by such a person is not a shame. You can't answer a man on the broches. So what comes out? That this portion of the Kriya Satorah, no one was called up. Right? No one was called up. So therefore, for sure, you can't call them up to have an aliyah latorah. Says Reb Moshe. Yes?
According to simple halacha, I don't know what Rashi said.
Yeah.
Is there a halacha problem of doubling, same thing twice?
Hmm? What do you mean?
Call them for the portion of maftir, then call them as an eighth aliyah. And then do maftir. And then do maftir. Have you been maftir?
You mean that, but you're still missing out one. You're not fulfilling the takonas chachomim. So the maftir becomes really the main aliyah.
No, for shvi, do from shvi to maftir.
Yeah.
Stop.
From
call
Shvi,
call up an eighth person, from eighth aliyah,
yeah,
from Maftir, then call them Maftir.
But there are two halachas. You have to read each portion with somebody. Remember, the original takone is that a person used to get up there and read a portion of the Torah.
Right.
And if a portion wasn't read by somebody, you didn't fulfill your chiyuv of reading this portion. Then it was changed. What?
But
you have to call Maftir. I mean, there is a new takone that Maftir has to be read twice. Once for part of the Kriya Satorah, and once because if you are going to read the Novi, it's an insult to the Torah not to be read a portion of it. So you're not fulfilling it if you only read once. Listen? Says Reb Moshe the following. If you know he's a koifer, if he's known to be a koifer, then of course the halacha stands, no question about it. However, nowadays it's very unusual to find a koifer, a real koifer, a real non-believer. What?
A bilaisi koifer.
Right. Very, very difficult. What? Most of the people are tinoik shenishba or mumor leteyovoy. Now, a mumor leteyovoin doesn't mean that he does not believe in God. He believes in God. He believes in the word that he's saying. So therefore, even though you have to minimize, again, and we see that the flexibility of halacha, You have to minimize in giving kovet to people who are mumori, meaning if you have a choice, don't do it. But if that becomes very, very difficult because of the pressure, you would be allowed to call someone who is called an unbeliever, but is not really an unbeliever because he's a tino shenishba, meaning in order, according to Ramosh, it comes out that in order to be a real koifer, you can't be staman amoritz. I mean, you have to study to be a koifer. Since they never bothered to really study, therefore they're not called koifrim. They're too amateurish. There are attitudes so amateurish that really they're not called koifrim.
The shame isn't the same either.
What? 100% that it is. 100% that it is. It's not true. It's not true. Especially
if they made Brit Milah, they consider that they didn't went out of Klal Yisrael like a koifer. Koifer, it makes him out of Klal Yisrael.
Right. As long as he didn't declare his rejection of everything, it's like a gelach. I'm sure says stamo lishmo. Meaning, even though he doesn't actually positively think about what he's doing, but since his overall attitude is that he's not against it, right? So it's begeder stamlishma, we assume the right intention even though he didn't actually think about it. So therefore it's a broche, and you can answer omein, and you can call him to the Torah. That's the psak of Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's extremely, extremely important psak. It's extremely, extremely useful because this problem is so common. It hardly ever happens that you don't have such a situation. Yeah.
So this is what those four rabbis speak to the culprit.
As a matter of fact, he says, no choice. However, again, what?
That intelligent on the subject. There also, many are a lot of.
Oh, there is such a thing. I can't say exactly because Rav Moshe doesn't say it, but from experience, you see that there are rabbis that are as much tinoch shenishba as anyone else. They absolutely have no idea. There's such an amiratzim, you see, because they assume that if you're a rabbi, you probably know something. If you know something, then you're a koifer. It's incredible, the amiratzis of many of the reforming conservative rabbis. It's amazing. So, I have no doubt that halachically they are considered tinoch shenishba, except that I still say that Rav Moshe Feinstein knew that, and he still maintained that even though they are amiratzim, since they symbolize knowledgeable people, meaning because of the symbolism, they are after all conservative and reform rabbis. They have a status in the community. So therefore, even though they themselves are tinoch shenishba, beinom lamokim, when they come, their baruch shalom will treat them like tinoch shenishba. But we have no right to treat them as tinoch shenishba, which means there is such a thing as what you symbolize, what you represent, even though personally you are not that way. This is why Rav Moshe's halacha still stands, even in a situation when you know for sure the man is a complete amoritz. Yeah.
I heard once that it's a big difference if he comes like a guest to shul, or he comes like a leader to shul. He comes because he is the leader of the community and there is something special and he comes to shul, or he comes like a guest of a bar mitzvah. That's a big difference.
You mean if he comes as a guest, you can?
You can give it.
I thought the other way around, because there he's coming to shul doesn't show any commitment. It can be a goy and come to shul for a bar mitzvah.
No, it's not a rabbi.
Oh, you mean a rabbi?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You mean that when it comes to a mitzvah, you're allowed to give a conservative or reform rabbi an aliyah? That's a chidush. Where would you hear it from? But I want the truth.
It's a chidush.
Yeah. It's a chidush, and of course such a thing.
Because if he's not needed anymore,
that is correct. I've seen it myself in Shari Chesed, that they actually, someone who was a conservative rabbi, he came and they gave him an aliyah, they were like, yeah, now in Eretz Yisrael, no more conservatism, no more reform.
If you would ask him, he would say, I'm conservative.
In Eretz Yisrael, he's not a symbol anymore. He ceased to be, it's like following the same justification. When he comes to Eretz Yisrael, he ceased to be a symbol of fear. Not anymore.
Right?
Exactly. Right? He, right? in the United States, and when he's still part of his community, he comes to your community, he represents somebody. You can't give him COVID.
I have a problem with the Ramosha. He's saying maybe even any conservative reform rabbi may really even be a Tiyan Ishba. But you might have some problems with other applications the way Ramosha treats conservative reform rabbis, because I don't think he would say that they're Kashal Aedis.
100% not.
And he's probably, that has a lot to do with, I mean, you're saying we treat them lemaises as like apostolatus, but really in the Kara they would be
No. Apostolatus is even Tinoch Shanishma is apostolatus. So that won't even help you. Right, that won't help you.
For me,
I'd like to ask you, we're talking about your bar mitzvah, but what about running the shul day to day, Shabbos to Shabbos, you have people who always come. That would also include those people? You give them just as many aliyahs. Do people in the shul on the Shabbos? Do you give the same amount of aliyahs to persons in the Mechal Shabbos?
100% according to Ramosha Feinstein, if it's possible for you to cut down the Mechal Shabbos altogether, do it. In other words, give aliyahs only to people who are Shomer Shabbos. Ideally, that's the way you should do it. Which means Rav Moshe is clear in this issue, that even though it's permitted because of to avoid machloikes, that's all it is. It's permitted. Lechatchile, give aliyahs only to Shomer Shabbos. If it's up to you, and it won't cause machloikes, and that's how you're supposed to behave. It's only Bedeyeva that he says, because of machloikes, it's permitted. When it's a koifer, even if it's going to cause machloikes, don't do it. In other words, this goes into the issues, like the Melamed Lohel says, Pshiok Doilo. If you're part of a Pshiok Doilo, don't be part of it. Don't be part of it at all. Now,
can I ask you a question about Aliyah? About, let's say, a child of a mother who's conservative conversion. So I heard last week someone lost his job.
Interesting, I didn't hear before that. But a goy, right? There is no heter altogether. Remember, you know, talking about conversions. I mean, what?
You would consider a pure adult.
There's no question about it. There's no question about it. The point is that I have to, we are talking about conversions. You know, when this whole issue of conservative reform conversions started, so I really didn't understand the whole issue. And then, I found out that Rav Shach said exactly the same idea. I know Orthodox conversions. And I don't believe in them. So if when you tell me about reform conversions, conservative conversions, do you know the majority of Orthodox conversions are absolutely meaningless? The majority. What is an Orthodox conversion? Bris Milah is okay, right? Bris Milah is okay. Tvileh is okay. But Kabbalah's mitzvahs is absolutely non-existent, which means even though they make him say the words, right? They know it, and the rabbi knows it, that from the mikveh, right, they're going to be Mechal Shabbos. They're not going to keep any of the mitzvahs. They got married only because they fell in love with a goy or a goyeh. What value does that have? So there are people who say, well, that's Dvorim Shebelev. So what if they don't mean it? Right? Remember, the majority of conversions, Orthodox conversions, is a conversion to being a non from a Jew. Remember that.
Children too, same thing.
And you mean
words,
adopted children is a different halacha altogether.
Not adopted, say from a guy, a Jew is married to a non-Jew lady, and then afterwards wants his kids to be, you know, become Jewish.
Right. Children under 13 and under 12, it's a that's different it. Thing. That's uh-huh. That's a different halacha. Uh-huh. How does Beis Din is a different thing. Because there is a Aldas Beis Din, you don't need Kabbalah's mitzvahs. That's the major difference. Rav Moshe Paskins, and it's in his Sefer, that we don't say in such a case that Dvorim Shebelev not Dvorim. Right? The whole heter of the Orthodox rabbinate of saying Kabbalah's mitzvahs, right? I'm a Kabbal mitzvahs, right? Is because even though everybody knows that from there they are going to come to make a big party in the in the Trefa restaurant, right? Doesn't matter, but her words didn't say that. And Dvorim Shebelev Eino Dvorim, says Rav Moshe, that's ridiculous. Dvorim Shebelev Eino Dvorim is when we really don't know, you don't know and I don't know, like I tell you that I'm selling this safer and I have in mind that I'm not really selling to you, so my words, Dvorim Shebelev, they're not Dvorim. But Dvorim that is Belev Kolotam, everybody knows about it. everybody knows about it. It's ridiculous to say Dvar Moshe Melech and Dvar Moshe, says Reb Moshe. Therefore, Orthodox conversions most of the times are meaningless. So you tell me about Reform, conservative conversions. Most Orthodox conversions are meaningless because there is no real Kabbalah's mitzvahs. Okay? So, and that's, it's interesting. I found out that Rav Shach says exactly the same way. He says, what do you mean we are fighting against Reform and conservative gerus? How about the Orthodox gerus? Mami, she said, the Bezeh HaLoshem. Orthodox gerus is okay, he says.
In this case of the conservative Leah, you would say that that's a case where a rabbi should stand in line? I mean, he should have a job?
Well, now, that's a question. That's a question. The point is like this. What about... are you in such a situation? Maybe you would even know who it was. There was a certain person in my shul in Mexico. As I said, today it's very hard to be a koifer, right? But I had one. One of my balebatim had to be a koifer. A man who learned. And he became a member of the Bund, you know, the
socialist.
A socialist and a Yiddishist. Anti-Frum and anti-Zionist. You know, they really believed that their homeland was Russia at the time. And there was a whole ideology behind it. And he was, in my opinion, he was 100% a koifer. He really was, because he even knew a little bit how to learn. Right? But the incredible part is that he came to shul every single Shabbos. He wouldn't miss. And After the shul, we always had a kiddush. It was a very wealthy community. They had a full meal. And everybody, and certain people used to say a Dvar Torah, and this man used to say a Dvar Torah. Every single Shabbos would say a Dvar Torah. Right? And of course, sometimes he would say things, you know, parav. And sometimes he would actually say what he believes, you know, without shame. Right? Nobody's going to throw him out. So, what is the attitude to a man who comes to shul, right, says the great Torah, koifer through and through, no question about it, right? He loves Judaism. He loves it. He doesn't believe a thing, but he loves it.
He wants to speak to
the Shaila is that I don't believe, I'll tell you what the Shaila is. I'll pinpoint the Shaila. I'll pinpoint the Shaila. The Shaila is... Number one, that people don't know the difference between this man and everybody else. 90% of the Balebatim were Mechalalei Shabbos, right? Wait. As far as the symbolism of this man, right? What do they associate this man with? Is he really a koifer as much as anybody else? I knew that he was different. Because I know that the man knows. He's an ideological koifer. He's not a Tinoch Shenishba anymore. Right? Now, I don't call him up for the Aliyah. Right? I don't call him up for the Aliyah. Sometimes in certain communities, the rabbis tell the Kabbalah who to call up. Right? That wasn't the case in my shul. They decided who gave the Aliyahs. I wasn't responsible for it, and everybody knew it. I'm not responsible who gets the Aliyahs. I'm not responsible for who speaks in the Kiddush after the Musaf. So what should be my attitude? Should I get up and say, listen, it's either him or me or not, right? You know, it's up to what point, right? The same thing like a conservative rabbi, reform rabbi comes to your shul, the Balebatim want to honor him, right? What is your obligation? To what degree are you allowed to be there? The point is like this. The Melamed Lo'il doesn't say it here clearly, but in many, many cases, you have to understand that, I mean, he does imply it, that you should do an Avera, that's out of the question. If you are forced to do an Avera, like for instance, to eat at a banquet where they give non-kosher food in order not to embarrass the host, right, that is out of the question. Better lose your job than eat non-kosher food to embarrass the host. What about if you are present at the time that an aver is committed? What?
There's a person I know who went for a job, and they said, oh, you only get a job as a rabbi if you stay during the mixed dancing, which is after the meal.
Oh, right. That's an example, right? Meaning, you have to be present during that time when an aver is committed. That is a crucial question. So then the question becomes, the word that he used, uses is shituf. Are you a shutuf in the avera or not a shutuf in the avera? That's a crucial word. Are you a partner in the avera or you are not a partner in the avera? What does that mean, you're a partner? You're not a partner at all. You have nothing to do with it. Obviously, he doesn't mean are you a partner in the avera, but are you seen as a partner in the avera? I mean, again, what you represent to others is the crucial point. Everybody knows, in his case, that you are against women singing in your choir. Everybody knows that you are against an organ in your shul. The question is, by being in the shul, do you become automatically a shutef or not? Okay? Now, it's a very, very subtle question. I mean, in most cases, you live an enormously difficult time to decide. But if you decide that your being there does not represent in any way a hechsher, a shituf, to what is being done, you don't have to leave your job. In other words, if someone is called up and he's a koifer, but no one knows the difference between this man and him, it's your opinion, right? I decided that that's not enough of a reason for me to make an issue out of it. Which means, nobody sees me as a shutef in the avera. There is an avera, you're not allowed to, you can't call him up. You can't call him up, he's a koifer. At least that's my opinion. But since no one else sees it, and they don't see me as a shutef in it, then I am not obligated to leave my job because of that. And that's the reason why that I didn't make an issue out of it at all.
But you're worried about yourself being a kriyasator.
Again? Oh, so there's a point. So by kriyasator, there is like this. Now, what does Reb Moshe mean when he says that it's usher to call a koifer because his brocha is not a brocha? So what did you lose out? You know that, since we're talking about Kriya Satora, let's analyze. What is the takone of Kriya Satora? Takone of Kriya Satora is that seven people should get up and read from the Torah. That's the takone of Shabbos Kriya Satora. Seven people should. Because of the development, right? There is such a concept as development of halacha, right? Even though many people don't like it. Because of the development of halacha, which is not really a development of halacha, but it's a development of our amiratzes and our flaws, we lost our capacity to read from the Torah. The majority of Jews don't know how to read from the Torah. So at a certain point in time, the halacha became, you know what, let somebody be moitzi you in the reading of the Torah. Let somebody be moitzi. But that requires a few changes. Number one, according to the original takonim, you know what the original takonim used to be? The first one, the kohen used to make the brocha rishoino. You know, that's how the takonim was. The kohen, the number one, used to make the brocha rishoino. And the last one, the achron, used to make the brocha achrona. Nobody used to make a brocha in between. What's that? What for? The beginning of it, the Kriya Satora is one mitzvah. Kriya Satora with seven kruim. The mitzvah is on the tzibur, not on the individuals. You have to understand this. It's not that the individuals have to read the Torah. The tzibur has to read the Torah. So the tzibur, through the shaliach, tzibur has to make a brocha rishoino. And the tzibur, through the shaliach, tzibur has to make the brocha achrona. That's how it was. Because of our amiratzes, we don't know how to read the Torah anymore. They decided they need a shaliach tzibur for kriyas haTorah. But if so, how will the seven kruim be recognized? How will they be recognized? Right? They'll say Yamorik so and so, and he'll stand there, not say a word. He'll leave somewhere. Yamorik so and so. What will be their part in the shiva kruim? So they came up with this following idea. We have to be mesakin something to make sure that the connection between the oile and the reading of the Torah is clear. Since it can be in the reading because it doesn't know how to read, it has to be in broches. Brocha rishoino and brocha achroino. This is when the new takone came into being, the takone that each one of the kruim has to make the brocha rishoino and brocha achroino. Okay? Now, why isn't it a brocha levatolo? Because we say true. The chiyuv is on the tzibur. Right? Now, the chiyuv of Kriya Satora is on the tzibur. But since the Chachomim also were Mesakin Shiva Kruim, so once you become the Korui, since once you are called, your separate mitzvah also could use, not requires, but could use a bracha because you also have a mitzvah. You understand? So before you were yotze your personal bracha also by the shaliach tzibur's first bracha and last bracha. And by the way, these two dinim, the tzibur din and the yochid din, is fulfilled even today when you get an aliyah. Right? So it's true that the shaliach tzibur reads the Torah, but you should also read the Torah quietly with the shaliach tzibur. That's what it says. Why? Because you have the second halacha. You have the personal chiyuv, right? That you are a koruy. The moment you become one of the shiva koruim, you gain that personal chiyuv of fulfilling my obligation as a koruy. How do I fulfill it? So ideally, by reading it for the public. B'deyeved, by at least saying the bracha before and after for my personal chiyuv. And even according to the new situation, that there is a shaliach tzibur, say it quietly. Right, so that's, you know that that's taka de halacha. If you are able to say quietly with a shaliach tzibur, say word by word with a shaliach tzibur. Okay? Now, once you hear the essence of the halacha, what does Reb Moshe mean when he says it's osur to call the koifer? It's osur mitzad ma. Remember, the koifer is not reading like it was in the original takone, right? He's not reading from the Torah. The shaliach tzibur is up from a Jew. Hopefully, he's reading from the Torah, right? Yes. So the tzibur dikeh haloche, 100%, you fulfill, true. Remember, there were some kehiles that, of course, many gdolim were against it. But you know there were some kehiles that by the toicheche, in Parshas Bechukosa, in Parshas Kisovoi, they wouldn't call anybody. The gdolim were against it. What do you mean? A piece of kriya seter, how can you not call anybody? But there were some kehiles, they wouldn't call anybody. And they were fulfilled the shiva kruim outside of the toicheche. So, is the tzibur yoitze the toicheche? Of course there is a shaliach tzibur. What wasn't fulfilled? The chiyuv of the shiva kruim, right? That wasn't fulfilled. So, that is, that tzibur dike chiyuv of shiva kruim, you weren't yoitze. But in kriya satori you were yoitze. You follow what I'm saying? So, this is the point. The point is like this. Kriya Satorah you are yoitze, whether they call a koifer or not, because you don't depend on the koifer for the Kriya Satorah. Okay? What you are not fulfilling is the chiyuv of Shiva Kruim, that every portion of the Torah should be divided by to somebody. That you don't have. Fine, so that you are losing out. But it's not as if you don't have Kriya Satorah. You understand? Right. So,
and that you are allowed to lose out of. It's just like an animal.
So you lost out, be honest. You lost out. You're annoyingness. So you lost out Shiva Kuruim. You know, that part is no Shiva Kuruim, which lechatchila shouldn't be done.
Why are you an onus?
Oh, so the point is like this. You are an onus because it won't help you to get up and scream.
Why are you the rabbi?
Oh, so the point is like this. If it's going to help, right, so of course. If you have to lose your job because of that, because they'll see it as a aksharas, as some kind of a crazy idea that came into your mind, right? Then you don't have to fight it. It's like everything else. If you decide that this is an issue that it won't help, and it's not important enough to lose my job, better keep quiet about it. You just have to decide that the issue enters into that category.
Okay, let's say you said this fellow got up and spoke. Sometimes he came up with some wild ideas during his Divrei Torah.
So that, you have the obligation. And that, of course, I would get up right afterwards. And in a very diplomatic way, say exactly what he said wrong, right? And of course, you don't have to openly say, you know, that he should create antagonism by the audience, but 100% you have to express your point of view. Again, more based on Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's idea than the idea of Toichocho. Toichocho, you're not mechuyev. I mean, if you knew the audience, you would realize that at that point, Toichocho wasn't the problem. After a while, Toichocho, yes, became a problem because little by little, new people started coming in, and people whose ideology could be shaped and could be changed. So by then already, of course, I would definitely get up, and as a matter of fact, I used a lot of his statements as the basis for my next week's sermon, right? Which is very, very, very positive. But first of all, it livened up the whole situation, and everybody already expected, oh, so what am I going to answer? So, fine, so that was something, an attraction. That was an attraction that was, in a way, positive. But you have to be extremely careful, yeah.
What would you do in a situation if that kofa was, if the shul wanted to honor that kofa for Kriyas HaTorah as a Shleis Tzibur, who by definition would be able to act as Shleis Tzibur?
You mean for Kriyas HaTorah? For Kriyas HaTorah, I mean, that is already, you're not Yotzei Kriyas HaTorah. Again, do you have to lose your job? Right. Even without Kriyas HaTorah. That's a question that you would have to, but of course if you could fight it, of course you shouldn't allow it. Yeah.
How far does it go? Do you give a concern to the reform rabbi Kavila or Hanin Zmiros?
According to Reb Moshe, nothing. Nothing. Any kovo that you give a real koifer is osir. Right? Any kovo that you give a real koifer is osir. Meaning if it's up to you, you're not allowed to give it. That is, nobody should associate you with the kovo that you're giving to the person. Yeah.
So then it comes out that you, so then for what Reb Moshe said and what you did is not the same thing. In other words, he said not to call the kofar, and the fact why you was being called up was because
the halacha still stands. Don't call up a kofar. The question is that enough? Is that enough? And you may come to a situation that you do it. Let's say that.
I mean, the whole shalom was, is that enough for you to what? Pick a job?
To put your job on the line.
So it wasn't only because it was.
I believe he was a kofar, and I believe it was wrong. Kruyum. What?
So you were only missing out on the Sheva Kruyum, but not on the Kriyas
HaTorah. Right, right.
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. In other words, the crucial point is Shituf. That's what I'm stressing. It's not only from here, but the word that he uses is Shituf. Are you, in the minds of the people, associated with this act that they consider as being representing a rejection of your ideology? Then you're allowed. In other words, let's take your situation. The situation when you are forced to say, beyond after the dancing, let's say you are invited to a wedding, and they ask you, now, listen, you have to make Sheva Brachas, right? A common situation, and the Sheva Brachas is going to be after the dancing, and meanwhile you have to be there while mixed dancing is going on. What do you do?
You can come back after.
What?
You can come back.
Right. So that's what the thing. You know, you go outside and you don't stay inside. And that's it. On the other hand. What do you do if he says, well, it's just 10 minutes. Meanwhile, you are inside. Meanwhile, you are inside. Should you take a stand and say, no, there is mixed dancing, I'm leaving. Right? So, again, there the rule is pretty clear. Again, remember, you have to know what community it is. If it's a community that there is a chance that you can really fight against mixed dancing, it's at such a point, it's such a level. That is like the Chazon Ish calls the battlefront. Right? If that's the battlefront, the way the Chazon Ish puts it, do everything to fight it. If you recognize this is not the battlefront, the battlefront is still, are they going to drive to Shomer Shabbos or not? Right. That doesn't even come into consideration, next mixed dancing. That's out of that at this point of your struggle to bring Yiddishkeit into the community, that is not the battlefront. Right. Now, do they see your presence there as a shituf in the mixed dancing? If they do, then of course you're not allowed to stay there. You have to take a stand and everybody should see that you are leaving. What about if you are not associated with this act? You are not associated, they don't associate you. Everybody realizes, of course, the rabbi doesn't go mixed dancing, but some people, of course, go mixed dancing because that's the most natural thing in the world. You are very odd that you don't. Right, that you don't go mixed dancing, and of course by Shabbos because you're going to be there again. They don't see it as a symbol of agreement, just the opposite. They don't see you as a symbol of agreement for the mixed dancing. Therefore, again, if you can fight it, fight it. If you can't fight it, definitely that's not one of the issues for which you give up your job. Now, it's not included in what the Melamed Loyal says, an organ in shul and women in the choir, which is a pshiyot doilo. That, I would say, of course, somebody can come up and say, no, that is a pshiyot doilo, but I would would say that that will not be in the category of Kshiyot Doilo, but at least the concepts are clear, the applications are difficult. Something which is called a Kshiyot Doilo Nyora Shutev, give up your job, something that you do not consider a Kshiyot Doilo, right? You know, they don't consider it a Kshiyot Doilo, they don't see it as a Kshiyot Doilo, they don't consider it a rejection of your ideology. An organ in Shul in Germany at the time was a rejection of the Orthodox religion, of the Orthodox Jewish religion. It was a rejection. If you accept it, you also reject it. Right? If you accept an organ in Shul, you are rejecting the Orthodox religion. So, again, the symbolisms here are crucial. Symbolisms are crucial. In other words, whenever an Avera, like he says, you don't have to transgress an Avera, then the next question is, how much, how symbolical is the act that's going on, and should I abandon the battlefront because of the meaning of the symbolism? Yeah.
Do you think there's a difference between a koyfer who's lining the parsha and between a boy who is bar mitzvah and he's lining the parsha? There are a lot of shuls that the bar mitzvah is not for, he's lining the whole parsha.
Yeah. Again, there is no question that a bar mitzvah boy, you can't call him a koyfer. It's vade atinok shenishba, right? To let him read, if it would be up to you, of course you should. Right? The point again is, what do you do? Do you fight it or not? So if you can fight it and win it, of course. If you can't win, don't fight it, because it's not enough. Meaning, whatever is not enough to give up your job, and whatever doesn't go into the category of anies nafshi yitzalti, keep quiet, don't say a word. Fight when it's something that you can win and it's worthwhile to win.
But I was yoitzer with this
kid? Even assuming that not. I mean, according to Reb Moshe, it seems, why not? I mean, he's a mumor leteyovon. A mumor leteyovon believes you shouldn't give him COVID, but if he's doing something, it can be moitzer you. But even if you argue with Reb Moshe and you want to be machmir, right? So you don't have kriyas haTorah, right? Most you can say is, you're an oinus. You know, it's as if you're in the middle of the desert. You have nine people in shul. You don't get a minyan. So you don't have. So you're an oinus. You don't have kriyas haTorah. Are you mechuyev to give up your job for not hearing kriyas haTorah? Right. Of course, the problem is when you don't have a kosher minyan in shul. Right. What kind of a kriyas haTorah is there if there are no ten shomer shabbos in shul? Now that's not called in a way a tzibur. Some people say. You need, six, you need those that didn't. What? You need to be a minion, you need 10 Shomer Shabbos. As a minion of kosher Jews. The point is, even non Shomer Shabbos are not mechuyev in Kriyas haTorah. But, okay, but well, that's a different story. So, that's the rule. The crucial words are Shituf. Is your position a Shituf in the Avera? That's the crucial word according to Melamed Lloyd. Yeah.